I'm very pleased to welcome into the studio Alex. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Paul.
And Alex, you're a bit of an old hand at this because you do podcasts and everything else. So this is, you know, all this kind of setup here is probably very familiar to you.
Yeah, very, very familiar. So I am. Thanks for having me anyway, firstly. But I help run a podcast with the ex Scottish international rugby player that was a Saracens rugby player, Jim Hamilton, and that show is called The Big Jim Show. So yeah, I've
Big Jim's quite important there because Jim is absolutely enormous.
Isn't he is, yeah, he is. He's 6'9". He says 6'10" with heels, and he's a man mountain. He is.
There we are. No, I am being a Saracens supporter and a season ticket holder for many, many years. I remember Jim very well, but I didn't realise he was quite that tall. Crikey! Anyway, Alex, welcome along, and thank you so much for joining us. Now, Alex, tell us, we're going to come on to your sort of your job, which is I'm bursting desperately to want to find out about your job. But let's tell us a bit how you got there in the first place. So maybe tell us about where you grew up, because I think you're a local boy, are you not?
I am, yeah, which is very apt for a Hertfordshire based radio station. So I grew up, or I was born and bred in St Albans, and I lived originally for the first however many years of my life in Coneyheath, which is just across the 414. Okay. And then I moved to Smallford, which is the other side. And I went to Verulam as my secondary school. I played for a number of local sports teams. Old Albanians was my rugby club. Harvesters was my football club when I was younger, then St Albans City. So yeah, I'm very much entrenched in
well, I was going to say you're more of a local boy than I could ever think. Now, interesting. You mentioned St Albans Football Club because we actually do live commentary for the matches, and it's really interesting because hang on a minute, does that stop people from going to the game? Well, apparently no. People go to the game and they listen on the radio to the commentary, and it actually has won awards as well. So they're doing a great job with their local.
I live next to the ground now, and actually I went with my dad, my uncle, my brother and my brother-in-law, I think it was last year or the year before, to a game. It was packed. It was really good.
Although this season they're not doing quite so well.
I don't follow the results,
I think they're not doing so well, and a managerial change took place as well during this year. But I'm no football man. Tell us a bit about your sporting history, your own personal sporting history. So you played all these sports, whatever. So to what sort of level did you play?
I had relative success when I was growing up. It was the weekends were busy because, as I remember it, my mum might tell me differently, or my dad. But I was playing football on a Saturday, and I did relatively well in football. I played at district level and then went on to play at county level in football. And that was always normally on a Saturday. And then on a Sunday, I would also be playing rugby, and I'd be playing for OAs. And at the time, I can't quite remember if there was any smaller stuff, but I played county rugby coming through the system. So I think on some weekends, I'd have county football on a Saturday and then county rugby on a Sunday. So on a county level, I was pretty well established. And then that led to me, instead of going on to take A-levels for my sixth form years, as they were, I went to Oaklands College, where few years of the inception of the Saracens link with Oaklands College. So I played there for a number of years. And that's probably a good place to start on, I guess, where I am today, where I think the seeds were sowed as to where I am today. And
but just before that, I just want to point out, you'd be really one of those very annoying kids if you're playing football and rugby at those sort of levels. I mean, we've all been either the kid or the dad, and we sit there, we get very annoyed with people like you. I think it's fair to
say. Thank you. I don't know if my mum and dad would agree travelling around, but they were great when I was growing up. They would take me all over the county and even further, obviously, when I was playing sports. So yeah, very grateful to them. But when I was in that Oaklands system, I came through and I played with some really good players, players who have gone on to play professional rugby, and probably most notably at Saracens, a few of them. A really good friend of mine is Jackson Ray, who I came through that system with. I played in that team with a guy called Jake Sharp as well, who is now a coach at Northampton Saints, who won the Premiership last year. And that's probably where the relationships were formed to, right. to build, I guess, the career that I have right. to this day.
So you left Oakland, and then did you then immediately enter the world?
No, I didn't really know. I think it's quite that's a difficult period of life when I guess all you enjoy is playing sport, and you don't really have an understanding of what you want to do as a professional career. And I don't think, looking back now, I don't think there should be any pressure on people of that age to know exactly what they want to do over the next 10, 15, 20 yeah. years. And I was okay with my education, but I went to... I don't think if I had my chance to go back, I'm not sure I would go to university, but I did. Again, I'm extremely grateful that I did go to university because it bought me some time to right. figure out what I wanted to do with my life right. afterwards. Right. So I placeholded a few years at university, and I studied coaching at sports science, right. coaching in sports science at Nottingham Trent University.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And then when I left, I kind of thought, well, I want to get back into professional sport, but how long is a piece of string? Where do you start? How do you get into professional sport? So using a mixture of contacts that I had, my parents had, and then knowing or being very close with guys like Jackson who were playing at Saracens, I landed myself a job at Saracens when I first left university.
Ah, okay. Well, just the Saracens, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
the thing that, again, for our listeners who may not be aware, Saracens have a very strong reputation for being... Well, two things, really. One is being part of the local community and involving itself, and they now actually have schools, I believe. They actually run schools as well, but they're very integrated into the local community. But the other thing that they have been really good at doing is helping the players to build their own careers post rugby. And again, my knowledge, anyone who's seen Tiki Tonga, that of course is a coffee company which is run by a couple
Brad
of
Barrett,
the by
yeah.
Brad Barrett, who an ex player, and also there's the Wolfpack beer as well, isn't there?
Yeah, Al Hargreaves and Chris Wiles. Yeah,
there we go. Good. I'm glad you're filling me with yeah. the names. All I know is the beer and the, or whatever. But it's really interesting because that's all part of the ethos and that sense of family ethos, I think, around the Saracens organisation. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, very, very fair. And I think that was a massive point of difference for the club, certainly from, I would say, the years 2012 to 2018, when they had a new ownership structure that came in, but a new sort of management board just above the playing squad came in. And one of them, their big emphasis that they put on that squad was treat people unbelievably well and their work unbelievably hard for you. And that goes all through from an 18-year-old who's just starting his career to looking after those guys who are at the very end of their career and wanting to find new ventures to move on to.
So then how did you step into the world of sports agency?
So through the role that I eventually ended up having at Saracens, I'd met a few sports agents. So when players would arrive into the club, let's say it was an Argentinian who was coming from abroad, I would typically help them settle into life in St. Albans. Oh, I knew okay. where everything was, and I'd help them and their families settle into life when they first arrived. And through that role, I met a number of agents, but particularly the guys that I still work with now. I had a look the other day, and this is my 10th year of being an agent. So it was a while ago. But one day there was an opening at a company which at the time was called Essentially, and they said, look, we're interviewing people for the role of a junior agent, and we think you'd be good at it. Would you be interested? And at the time I hadn't really had any thoughts about becoming a rugby agent or a sports agent, but the more that I looked into it, the more interested I became. And then I think it was a process of 6 or so months, and then I had the role.
We've had your history, your life history. We've got you up to the point where you've become a sports agent. Now, we need to know, because me, like most of our listeners, I say, what do you do? What is your job?
Yeah, it's probably the question that I get asked the most when people find out what I do as a job. And I guess the easy way to put it is if we're occasionally or frequently across the season, I'll meet parents of younger players, and they always ask, you know, what is your role? And that's a really easy place to start. They always ask, you know, what is your role in our son's development, for example? And a very, very long-winded pitch, which I normally sit down for an hour and a half or 2 hours with parents. I guess at the end of the day, what it boils down to is ensuring that they have the appropriate advice when they're entering into a world and when they are going to be offered professional contracts from professional bodies and they're not very experienced with going down the legal route and also the values of what these players are worth. So the bread and butter of what a sports agent does is ensuring that they get the appropriate value for the clients that they represent wherever they're employed, and also making sure that the players that they do represent continue to have jobs beyond the end of their contractual cycle.
The one thing that's very interesting, the way you describe it just made me immediately think of actually house buying, in the sense that, you know, you can't I don't think you can pretty much do it yourself. So you need expertise to kind of help guide you and to give you that advice at the right time as well. Yeah. And obviously, when you think about maximizing your value, then how on earth, if you, again, maybe it's a rubbish analogy, but it's sort of working for me anyway. But the idea that you say, well, I've got this house and I want to think about the value of this house. Well, how do I know that? Well, I need advice. I need guidance how it works. So in terms of those people that you represent, do they tend to all be younger, sort of breaking through players, or are there more mature players?
It's a complete mix. So we, I work for a large company, a very large company based in London called Wasserman. And across the board, Wasserman will have 200, 300 plus professional players playing in this country. However, we work, I work solely on behalf of my clients. The company doesn't. So my client portfolio will be based of a mixture of players from 18 years old who are just starting out their journey all the way up to, I think my oldest player at the moment is 32 years old, who's playing over in France. So you've got a bunch of guys, and the company represent women as well, but I look after only male players. You've got a bunch of guys who are ranging in ages, interests, ambitions, and what they want to achieve from their sporting career.
And also possibly ability as well.
Ability, massively so. I think so. The rugby market has become... it's become increasingly difficult below the professional, the top professional tier. So our focus in general has been on representing, especially as a company, representing the best players who are in the country. So we'll typically only represent players who play in the Premiership or the URC, which is the Celtic League equivalent now, mixed in with some Italian teams. But yeah, there's a massive range of abilities of guys we look after.
And if you are, let's say, a player in the rugby Premiership and you're playing sort of week in, week out, how much connection do they have with you in your role?
It depends, and that's also the other interesting thing about our job. I have players who I'll speak to almost every day. In fact, there's one or two who I speak to absolutely every day. And then I'll have players who I'll speak to once a month, say, and when it comes round to the time of their contract expiring, that contact will intensify. Obviously, it's the natural cycle. But it's kind of relationship led, right? So it depends on how well you get along with the player. It depends on how much the player would like from you, whether that's from a personal connection or whether that's a business connection from them and them wanting you to deliver more for them. But it's a people's game, and people are different from person to person, aren't they? So naturally, you'll form closer bonds with some players than you will with others.
Yeah, and I guess the question which sort of is on my mind, and no doubt on the minds of listeners as well, when we read the tabloids and we look at stories about professional footballers and their agents, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are we talking about a very sort of different environment? Because there, it does seem to be quite a hard and harsh environment. And just help me sort of understand, or maybe you represent footballers as well, I don't know.
Fundamentally, I don't see any differences within the job. I think with the amount of money that is involved with representing a footballer, obviously there will be there will be a depth there which you don't necessarily get to with, I guess, rugby players. But that's only natural. I mean, they're talking about millions and sometimes genuinely hundreds of millions, certainly throughout the career of a Premier League footballer, whereas we're talking a relatively modest in comparison, hundreds of thousands maybe. If you're very lucky, you might get towards the millions if you play for a long enough time. So fundamentally, I don't see too many differences with the job, but yeah, they're, it's a bit more of a pressure cooker, I would say, but also I
can see that the kind of the relationship that you have with players is naturally different because of the quantum that's involved, and in some ways I'm assuming you're much more of a friend and a help to them and a guide to them rather than some sort of, you know, I'm sure you're very commercial, but if you're a football agent, it's, you know, it's nothing other than the commercial driver.
100%, and you do get as well. So look, there are a number of different rugby agents within the country as well, and I think certainly everybody that I work with and myself, we try to go down that road of building a very good rapport. But there are other agencies or other agents who are a little bit more cutthroat and they're extremely commercially driven.
Alex Twyman is with us this morning, and Alex is a sports agent, and we've been talking a bit about what sports agents are, but now Alex has a very strong focus on rugby and rugby players, so I thought it'd be really good to get a bit of insight now, but both those who watched some of the rugby over the weekend, and that was the Six Nations rugby, or some who may not have watched it, and I suspect that at the end of this discussion you might try and watch it in 2 weeks' time when it comes back again. Anyway, Alex, let's talk about the individual games, because the Six Nations is one of those strange things where they say people who don't tend to watch rugby will actually still watch the Six Nations and they'll get involved. So that's a good thing. But this weekend we saw some quite unusual activity. So starting with the Ireland-Wales match, well, probably fair to say that if you were watching that at half time, you might have had a thought about that game.
Yeah, I actually only caught bits of the game. I was at Twickenham to watch the England-Scotland game, but they've had a little bit of a new manager bounce, as you would say in football, haven't they? And I think they needed it. Wales badly needed it, and so the performance was much better from the bits that I did see than it has been in weeks gone by. Which is, it's important for rugby as well. We need a strong Wales side, but even when they were up at half time, and I was watching through that period, the inevitable was always going to happen. You know, Ireland are a far stronger side, and something that we're massively seeing within in rugby now in particular, and you'll see it all throughout the tournament, is the teams with the stronger benches will often pull away in that second half, and Ireland's depth and what they've got coming off the bench far eclipses what a Wales does, Italy's does, even England's, for example. So inevitably, as the game goes on, you can see that arm wrestle.
Yeah, although again, and obviously for those who may not have seen this, so the end of the game, Ireland won 27-18, and that was almost a little bit flattering because the Irish did not play particularly well during the game. But very nice to see a Welsh team with a bit of coherence, and it sort of sets up the fact that obviously they will play England at home on the 15th of March, and then on the 8th of March they're playing Scotland away. So that kind of sets up that's quite interesting. But let's move on to the match which you were at, and that was the England-Scotland game. Well, I should imagine that was quite a scary game to be at if you're an England supporter.
It was. Yeah, it was, and I think it was. It wasn't the best of performances from England. And if we go back to the first game against Ireland, our first half was good. If we go back to our game against who did we play second? We played the French. Our second half was good. So really, this week we kind of needed to put the two together and have a complete performance. It wasn't a disaster, but it probably wasn't the complete performance that we're expecting. But we still found a way to win when we haven't beaten Scotland in the last 4 years. So,
I suppose you're obviously a very proud England supporter there, but I think it might also be fair to say that Finn Russell did have a chance to win the game by that kick at the end.
He missed all three of his kicks, and I don't think you would be able to find another time where Finn Russell's missed all three of his kicks. But, you know, you need a little bit of luck on the way. And the England team is still early in their journey of where they can get to. There's a hell of a lot of talent in that England team, and they will be a very good team. Early on, to create the momentum, you need a bit of luck against France. You need a little bit of luck against Scotland. You need that feel-good factor to come to the team. And then also, for somebody like Amaro, it's very important as a new captain that his sides, Amaro Toji's sides, find a way to win even when they're not playing at their best, so that when they are playing at their best, you know, they'll be a force to be reckoned with.
I thought some of the commentary following the match, those two matches, was actually quite interesting, because when you think that in some ways the result for Wales, even though they lost, was better and more pleasing for everyone concerned because of their return, and also the sense that England probably lost a couple of matches in the autumn which they probably deserved to win. Yeah. Well, and then you say, well, okay, now it's their turn to win a match which they possibly didn't. But the thing that I found most interesting about the England game was the strength of the Scottish back line. I thought they were
phenomenal. Yeah,
absolutely incredible, and that does, I would say, be very worrying to almost any team that they play against.
I think so. Yeah, and they're also missing their highlight. I think who's their highlight? They're 12 Sione Tuipulotu. They're unfortunate to be missing, and they're missing Darcy Graham this week. So it was a slightly weakened Scottish side that came down, but, you know, the fundamentals of the game, our scrum was good, it was better than theirs. And I still think that if you take the England team against the Scotland team for man, I think England are a better team in general. This is probably Scotland's golden era. This is the best back line that they may ever have, and certainly for the foreseeable. So for Scotland, they really need to capitalise on the talent that they've got and start winning something.
So do you watch, as a sports agent, do you watch a game of rugby in a different way to what a normal punter does?
I don't think so. So for example, on the... Yes and no. I think... So I look after Ollie Chesham, who starts at lock for England. So when I'm at the game, typically I will probably player cam him more than I do the game in general. But I'll still watch the game in general, obviously, but everything that he does will be highlighted to me, for example.
Okay.
Or if I'm at a game and I look after two or three players, I've actually all of a sudden got quite a lot on my plate player camming two or three players, because it's not just about the moments that they're involved with the carry or the hit or the set piece. You're wanting to watch their movement around the field and how they're transitioning from being on their feet to back up and in the line and in the action. So maybe I watch it, a little bit differently, and I player cam people a little bit more. But in general, I'll still get the vibe of the overall game.
I'm just intrigued that you say, you know, you're watching the sort of their whole game. Do you then discuss that with them?
Depends on the player. On the player and whether they want that discussion and whether they want that feedback. I'm always quite conscious. I'm never going to be able to give them advice or better advice, sometimes maybe on the odd occasion, than what their coaches can or than what they can give themselves. But sometimes it's useful for them to bounce it off somebody and just sense check what they're thinking. Or if I feel that I can massively see something which I know could help them improve, then I will tell them.
Okay. I've got two further questions. The first one is the difficult one, and that is, so tell me the final standings in the Six Nations. Go on.
I think
it's top to bottom.
I think they end how it is now. I'm pretty confident that Ireland will beat France in Ireland. So that will be Ireland at the top, then France will be second. I'm not ruling out England coming above France, so coming second, because we've got Wales and Italy, and really we should be winning those games. But England turning up to a Millennium Stadium against the Wales, that's the one game that everybody wants to win if you're not England. So they could turn up there. But then, it'll be a shootout. I think Scotland will be in that fourth position. then Italy, then I do think Wales will finish
bottom. Okay, so there we are. So the man, we've got the prediction from the man on the inside, and it should stay the same as it is now. Ireland, France, England, Scotland, Italy, and then Wales at the bottom as well. Okay, so my final question to you, Alex, is, so if somebody's listening and they're thinking, I really fancy the idea of being a sports agent, what would you advise them to do? What would be the best way to prepare themselves for a career like yours?
Go and work within a professional sporting body, and whether that's a governing body or whether that's a club, and start building out your contacts and your network, because ultimately it's the whole game is about networks and contacts and being able to build relationships. So get some life experience, some work experience, but in the relevant field. So if you want to be a football agent, go and work at a football club or a football governing body. A rugby agent, go and work at a rugby club or a rugby governing body. And spend some time within the game, and really work up a little black book of people and a network that you can reach out to, because that's where your strength is in the role.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been great fun, and
thank you.
I think a massive insight into your world and the world of sport as well. And we will be reviewing your predictions for the
Please
Six
do,
Nations
yeah. Hold me to
in
them.
The coming
yeah,
time. But thank you them. So much for joining us
no,
this
thank
morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.